Welcome to The Dopest. I'm Zoe Brownstone. Each week, I talk with the activists, entrepreneurs, and artists shaping the cannabis landscape. In this episode, we take a deep dive into the archives and play a really interesting conversation I had with Jeremy Potvin and Laurelyn McCorrister of Weedbox, who produced this lovely podcast, and Robin Rabinovich of TerrAscend. Jeremy and Laurelyn shared their founder story and their then new partnership with TerrAscend. Here it is. I'm very excited. I have three lovely guests today. I have got Jeremy and Laurelyn from Weedbox, as well as Robin from TerrAscend. I'm jazzed to talk to you. This is exciting. We've never met before. But let's kind of get everybody acquainted. We'll go around the table. Jeremy, if you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do with Weedbox.
I normally say ladies first, but okay, we'll go with me. I'm clearly the oldest person in the room. I have a 20-year apparel and retail background. I got into tech startups back in 2010. That path led me to cannabis somehow.
How?
That's a long story, but the short version is we got really good at inbound marketing and audience building. And we had a period of our career where my co-founder and I were doing a lot of consulting. And we started this little marketing project, which immediately grew into Weedbox. We were just sort of showing a client how to do something, and this happened. Now, I'm being a little bit coy there. We would have been looking at the cannabis space for 4 months, like, oh my God, how do we get into this space? This is a massive opportunity. And when someone challenged me, like, that something was impossible that we were suggesting that they do, we decided to do it as an experiment with Weedbox. Within a month, we decided to abandon everything else we were previously doing and threw all of our energies into building this incredible company.
And how long ago was this?
Only 14 months ago.
14 months ago. And are 16
you, months.
16 months ago. And are you glad you made the jump?
100%.
Absolutely.
Look how happy I look.
You look really happy.
Right?
For the listeners at home.
I know.
Really. Laurelyn, tell me a little bit about you.
I'm Laurelyn. So co-founded Weedbox with Jeremy, 16 months ago, apparently, to be very specific. I've obviously been a cannabis user for a very long time. I think I kind of brought it more into Jeremy's life when we got together. But we met at a previous startup we were working at, dog brand World of Angus. Before that, I have like a background in the music industry. I'm a CrossFit coach, so I do that. That's how I got into using cannabis a lot more.
Really?
Like
recovery?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. Use it to sleep. For a number of reasons, I use it a lot, but and then I have a background in marketing, PR, stuff like that. So I'm the CMO and co-founder with Jeremy.
And for those that don't know, Weedbox is...
It is a cannabis brand for millennials. So we have medicinal, we will have recreational, we have content to go along with that. We sell adjacencies, so accessories, skincare, homeware, all that good stuff. And then obviously medical cannabis is a big focus for us right now.
Awesome. And you're currently in California?
We're about to launch in California. That will be this summer, but we're launched in Ontario right now in partnership with TerrAscend. So
awesome. Yeah. Which leads me to Robin.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit about yourself.
So I'm Robin Rabinovich. I'm the VP of Business Development at TerrAscend. I've been in this industry for 4 years now, which in most industries probably doesn't seem like a lot, but that's really the start of the cannabis industry. So I've been through two sets of regulations, both the MMPR, which is medical marijuana purposes regulation, as well as the access to cannabis for medical purposes regulation, and very much looking forward to C45. Ran a marketing department for one of the top 5 licensed producers now. Did a lot of product development as well as international licensing. So very familiar with our lovely set of regulations and how we can, partner with lovely people like Weedbox to navigate through it.
I might have to dispute that lovely set of regulations. Kind of frustrating. What do you think of the upcoming legislation here in Ontario?
I think the upcoming legislation segments a vertically integrated space into a number of, kind of segments in that regards. And I think it'll allow for a lot of specialization and for a lot of new players to come to the space and try and get involved.
I smell an LP person who likes licensed producers, but that's okay.
One thing I do have to say, I totally understand the need to kind of fight the corporatization of this industry, but do kind of realize there are a lot of people, real humans behind the scene that are kind of putting their blood, sweat, and tears 100%. into building these LPs.
Yeah. I think it's funny. I think a lot of people are like,
confused about what they're fighting against. They're like, yeah, totally. LPs, Lewis. I don't actually believe that. I only wish that there could be more licensed producers. I think that they're, you know, so-called gray market, black market actors who are dying for regulation and licensing and should be, but, you know, given the current situation.
And I think different LPs have different strategies as to kind of how to support some of those craft growers or new licensees coming to market, whether it's cultivation or processing. And I think, you know, TerrAscend in particular has a strategy that definitely supports that.
What's the strategy?
For sure. So the strategy, and I don't want to make this too much about Terra, so cut me off at any point in time, but the strategy is not only do we do our own in-house hydroponically very premium product, but we also work with a number of different suppliers to not only mitigate the risk of a supply channel going down, increase the genetic availability, but as this market continues, where we really are putting our focus on building some of the infrastructure for sales and branding channels, we're actually in a perfect position to work with some of these smaller producers where they can kind of allocate their capital and resources to a segment of the industry instead of trying to take everything on themselves. So whether that's a product you know, made for the medical channels where we can support with a call center, all of the testing, packaging, all of that, unique formulations is really where we kind of step in and get involved, or on the recreational side, allowing them the opportunity to participate with provinces, I think is one big LP, you know, your chances of getting some shelf space and supporting some of the craft growers to allow that opportunity. That's kind of where we come in a little bit different than some of the others out there kind of just building to support their own base.
Sexy.
Yeah.
Love that. Is TerrAscend originally from Ontario?
TerrAscend, Mississauga. We're strategically located right in the heart of it, which makes it zoning and, you know, construction slightly more difficult. Nightmare. But it puts us in a position to actually access 60% of all of Ontario through same-day capabilities. So we can actually do same-day delivery to majority of Ontario patients right now.
Yeah, I've sampled some of your product.
It's amazing.
Great brand.
Happy
great
to hear
company.
It.
Just to pivot a little bit back to Weedbox, let's talk about a bit about the origin. So where did it come from? Fever dream, blunt session, bong rip, like tell me.
You know, a lot of all of the above probably.
Nice. I mean,
you know, again, everything for the side of the table over here is like marketing born and marketing driven.
Not boring.
Boring.
Oh, sorry. I thought I heard boring.
No.
Not boring.
No, you won't hear that.
Okay, good. Never would.
No. It's, you know, my eyes are really opened to this space. From a conversation I had with one of the founders of Canopy Growth. He's just a family friend, and I got the phone with him for about an hour or two one day, and we went through the whole thing, and I was just like, oh my God, this is incredible. The opportunity was amazing. When you leave a seed like that in my head, it grows and grows and grows. And, you know, by the time last February had rolled around, I had already just sort of, like, I had the first year mapped out in my head. I wanted to see what the first month looked like. Like I said, you know, you had gone off to Winnipeg for the weekend. I said, I'm going to stay up for sure for 36 hours and code something. I'm going to send you a link. Just take a peek at it. I have a surprise. And I sent her a link on the Saturday night. I said, here's our new company.
And start writing content.
Just review potato chips and music. And just, we're just going to start connecting with the consumer. Cause I just know, you know, there hadn't been a branded legal transaction in the country. And when we looked at how I looked at the commodity in the space, and I said, what's it going to look like 5 years from now? Because that's the company I'm going to build now.
Mm-hmm. I wish more people had been thinking that a few years ago. It's a very progressive approach to cannabis.
It's how is a consumer going to want to engage with the product, whether it's medical, recreational? What does that transaction look like? What was the path that led that consumer to trust that company, that they want to do business with them? What did that company do to be legit? How did they connect with that consumer? And why does that consumer trust that company? Build that now.
So would you say that it's an aesthetic? Would you say it's a conversation? Would you say the accessibility of the site? I mean, I've been on the site.
So when you listen to a consumer, you go down that path, which leads to all of those things. But I wasn't trying to how did that start? It was just listening. Everything I've ever done is just you start by find the consumer that you want, focus on them. You're going to get adjacent demographics, especially boomers. Boomers have to bitch about millennials all day, but they envy them so hard. The only thing that millennials have that boomers don't, or is youth. Yeah. That's what they want the most, right? So you focus on your consumer and you listen to them. And you can, the best way to listen to them is just start writing content for what they do. We have a process where we go through, we build out like five or six different individuals within the consumer. And we run through what they would do from Monday morning at 7 a.m. to Sunday night at 11 p.m. We literally go, what does this person do every day?
What restaurants, what coffee shops?
When do they wake up? Do they work out?
What do you listen to? Yeah. Do you work out? What do you eat for breakfast? Like, all of that plays a such, and it plays such a big part in like how you live your life, the way you use
cannabis. And really intimate. Mm-hmm. And then when you build out that profile, you'll start to see similarities from every individual. And then you focus on those similarities and you start writing content for that and you just expand.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, for me, I like to wake up, have a couple tokes, work for a few hours, have a few more tokes. So it's like that kind of thing, right? Where you're actually looking at...
You're what
at...
we call our target demographic.
Heck yes. Exactly. If you need any product testing, you know where to find me. Yeah. So can I ask, maybe you don't want to share this, but in the beginning, like what were your initial, like what stood in your way? What were your first roadblocks coming up against you?
I think it was kind of like we were trying to do this at the same time that we were running another company as well.
Bandwidth.
Yeah. It was just bandwidth.
Similar
and we
product,
were so excited about it. No, so this was a brand that we have in the pet space called World of Angus. Cool. It's like a, just plugging the dog brand here.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, so it's an e-commerce brand. We make vertical pet products like dog blankets, dog parkas, stuff like that. Huge. So we were still running that company. And I mean, we still are to some extent, but we were just so excited about the opportunity that we just wanted to run with it and like put all our time in that. And I think that was kind of the hard thing at
and
first.
Well, we
as
also
well.
Had three other consulting clients still at the time. It was just, we literally had no time, like 100 hours a week and just like in tears.
But that's so you know you love it, right? Because we would do that in our spare time, of which we had none. It was like Friday night, like let's bang out some blog posts, let's do some strategy, whatever. And it was fun and rewarding. And I feel like I am like our target demographic as well. Like I'm like, that's what we mean when we say it comes from a place of authenticity as well. Like it's not like it's like a bunch of people who are like, ooh, the cannabis industry is exciting. Like let's swoop in and write these blog posts for millennials. It's like, I'm actually a millennial cannabis user. And I feel like I can authentically connect with people a bit better than like some other brands that don't necessarily have a female cannabis user who uses it at kind of at an intersection of medicinal and recreational, which I feel like a lot of people in the millennial space do because we're so exactly.
Yeah. I would also say that we're now starting to kind of close that gap. Whereas like traditionally a company would outsource to an agency that would hire a focus group that, and sure that in that focus group, every single one of them is us, but it's like, we don't need that anymore. We can determine it. We can build these products ourselves.
Which is so exciting. And it's like, there's such an opportunity like to start that conversation, especially because like, I feel like millennials more than any other generation are willing to talk about things like mental health, anxiety, what you use for that. Like, whereas I use it recreationally, like, I get anxiety or I have trouble sleeping or stuff like that. I use it for recovery, but I also use it just to unwind instead of like crushing a bottle of wine and being hungover the next morning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think this product is one of the first products that we're really seeing come in, you know, huge commercialization that sits purely medicinal purposes behind it. You know, you have your purely recreational purposes behind it, but you have this huge wellness component in the middle.
Therapeutic.
Right?
Yeah.
And wellness. And kind of fighting that stigma as well, right? Mm-hmm. When you focus on the purely recreational connoisseurs of it, I think we have a very 420 mentality associated with that. Yeah. And when we're approaching the wellness space, I mean, when we're looking for brand partners, that was definitely something that I think Weedbox got day one, is there is that kind of combination. And when especially approaching millennials, I think they're more willing to speak to both sides of that.
Do you find
healthcare.
That it's do you find that it's like there are any kind of similarities with appealing to the millennial market but also appealing to like the older market, as I point to Jeremy?
Oh my god, I'm Gen X.
Well, no, totally though. What are you saying?
There
like
are
boomers
parallels.
It's like you want like there are parallels, and no matter who you market to, like there's always going to be adjacencies and like secondary demographics that you hit. And it's like a lot of things like he's saying about boomers, like it's like you envy millennials or you want to be young, you want to be like in the know of what they're doing. So I think like you can kind of appeal to anyone that way. But obviously, like our focus, we think about our ideal customer or our target customer. That's what we're thinking of and who we're trying to speak to. But I think, it's like the wellness space grows so much more beyond like just the wellness millennial space. Like I think it can expand out so much more from just millennials. It resonates with a lot of people. So like you may decide to use it. Maybe females are using it to combat period pain, or maybe you're using it to help with sleep like I do. I think there's a lot of different uses for that. And we find that those articles and that content really resonates with with our target customer.
Yeah, for sure. I think the frustrating part for me as a consumer and also as like a part of this community in this industry is just the slowness of our healthcare system is that we want it to catch up. We want to be able to say with certainty that these things can help period pain. They can help with minor issues as well. You know, like I suffer from a minor polycystic ovarian syndrome. It's the troubles of being a woman kind of thing. Yeah. But I can't talk to my doctor about it because he refuses to even broach the subject of cannabis.
Yeah.
So it really is like getting the verbiage down and encouraging our practitioners and our doctors, our facilitators here in Ontario to like ask the questions and like do their research and
explore
and allow us to be part of this conversation.
And there's a ton of resources out there and available for that.
Any that you
we're kind
recommend?
Of constantly doing lunch and learns with a number of physicians as well as doing CMEs where they can actually get a certificate as a result of that. And as well as referring clinics, I think hold a huge value in the space right now where your doctor might not feel comfortable prescribing it himself. You'll still get the anecdotal responses traveling back to your doctor if he's still managing your care.
Yeah.
So that's where we're starting to see, you know, 1, 2, 3 patients move forward through the referral process and that original GP starting to feel more comfortable prescribing it as a result.
Really?
But no one's honestly going to be able to make any sort of claims until we get some efficacy behind this product. And anecdotal data is great and is so useful, but kind of being in a position of a licensed producer where we cannot share that anecdotal responses, we're really reliant on not only the patients to communicate that response back to their doctor, but to also help them, right? There's no pharmacist involved. Right. So when it comes to drug indication, reactions with other medications, any sort of contraindications, it's really important to have a LP that gets that space. And then moving into the recreational market, you really want to be able to standardize those effects, right? Which sounds very pharmaceutical.
But it's needed.
But it's needed to build brand.
Absolutely.
Right? And that's kind of where the pharmaceutical focus, if we're talking about kind of being the right fit from a partner and LP, I think that's really where it came in is how can they build a brand if the intended effect or the flavors or the taste are different every time?
Yeah,
we talked about trust this whole time, right?
So, I mean, we're pushing out part of our platform that we're building, should be ready in about 2 months, where we're going to let the community share this information with each other. Right. So we,
at the time, open share data.
This is just not to make it sound too complicated. Simply through reviews and you know, discussion boards. Mm-hmm. This is literally it.
Open forum.
We can't make these claims ourselves. So we're going to let the community do it.
Have you heard of SAIL?
Yeah.
So ideally, a system like SAIL, is that kind of like what you would be after on a more kind of national scale so that, you know, LPs from across the country can be part of this?
In terms of the education program that they're offering? Or?
Yeah, well, in terms of the data collection from physicians.
Data collection is, we take a different approach and we're going the clinical study route, to be honest, because until you go to full clinical studies, observational studies don't allow you to provide efficacy behind the product.
About,
Clinical studies are very expensive, right? So when we're talking about kind of participating in them, it's something that is of our kind of, you know, has been marked down as corporately responsible from our standpoint, something we agreed to do. First one that we're going to start to be studying is migraines as well as an opioid reduction study. But by doing it and spending the money on full clinical, it actually provides comfort back to the doctors, right? As opposed to kind of moving slightly observational.
Right.
The data that they are pulling is so valuable and not seeing away from that at all.
Yeah.
We're just slightly more pharmaceutically focused in the fact that we're going after, you know, understanding endpoints and then understanding the efficacy associated with that.
I mean, it does target the bottom line and it kind of encourages the growth of the community. You're not really going to capture a broader audience until you can show them in black and white, here's what this does and here's how long it takes to do it.
Yeah.
I am curious about, you touched on when you were saying,
was it standardization?
Yeah. Thank you.
My favorite
topic. So when you talk about standardization,
I know.
Do you mean within products, within effects, within or just the whole global sphere of that?
I think cannabis is a very unique product where we have effects. We have terpenes play a huge role, understanding the entourage effect and understanding that some of the main cannabinoids that are listed on the label, there are other phytocannabinoids and terpenes that may end up in a different kind of effect in the end.
Isn't it over like 100 different cannabinoids?
THC? It's over that. And you're starting to see some licensed producers, you know, increase their analytics to start focusing on some of the other phytocannabinoids, CBG, CBN, THCV.
CBC.
Exactly. Yeah. So as we kind of move forward and start to understand and more of those cannabinoids. But in terms of kind of what standardization means together, is this is a plant, right? Dried product, you're going to see some variance between lots, but there are some practices that you can take from good agricultural practices to standardize that as much as possible, whether that's keeping the plant shorter so there's not as much variance between the potency at the top nug versus the bottom, or starting with standardized growing medium, so sticking away from soil and going with rock well, where we can really control exactly that drip irrigation as well, controlling the water and controlling the entire environment through monocropping. So doing one crop per room and really standardizing the environment surrounding that to allow that standardized result. But I think as we see more product derivatives, more formulations, that's where the opportunity to standardize comes a lot easier.
Yeah.
I think, you kind of mix your ingredients, the API being one of it, the active pharmaceutical ingredient, and then you're able to dilute it down to a much more standardized level as opposed to the live plant matter.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you think now moving into legalization and normalization, we're going to start to see, like a CBG pill or a CBD, we're already seeing tinctures and capsules, but on kind of a broader scale, you can really start to refine those cannabinoids down.
One licensed producer has come up with a phytocannabinoid oil. So it is quite interesting. We're starting to see that happen. I think when we're going to start to see a lot of that happen is when we look for methods of producing cannabinoids beyond actual cultivation itself. Yeah. Because a lot of these phytocannabinoids
synthetically?
Whether it's synthetically or organically through other matters, that's definitely something that we have a focus on. Yeah. Understanding that some of these phytocannabinoids will not bring out a large amount per weight, just volume of the actual plant. It doesn't make sense to actually cultivate with that phytocannabinoid in mind, where you really have to find another means of creating or getting to that end result, because the opportunity cost of that licensed floor space really doesn't make sense to go after that phytocannabinoid.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, if you want to make an oil, the amount of the sheer weight of flower that you need to make certain extractions is massive. And unfortunately, cannabis continues to be one of the most wasteful industries. And finding ways to reuse the plant matter, reuse the oils and the byproducts, I think is going to be a really interesting next step after we've
pioneered our way,
legalized the plant, which seems kind of like a backwards way to do things, but I'm not a politician. Speaking of LPs, so how did you guys decide on partnering with an LP? What was that kind of, was it just kind of we have to at some point?
I mean, everything at the beginning was happening so fast and it was through LL and CrossFit relationship that this just presented itself one day. And literally from the moment I heard about the opportunity, I think it was 90% done by the end of that day. So
yeah, and we went in there so this guy I used to CrossFit with way back in the day, Bassam Hanna, who's one of the co-founders of TerraSend, he had reached out. I think he just saw on social media one of our other friends from the gym was in our first photo shoot that we literally did. It was our very first photo shoot we did. And he was posting, it was him smoking a joint or something. And Bassam's what? You're in the cannabis industry? Or no, he reached out to my friend and was whose company is this? He's I'm seeing it everywhere. And then he's it's LL's. My friend Raheem tells me that at the gym, I come home, Jeremy's on the phone with Bassam, literally within that amount of time.
Yeah, it was
I think
the
we went
Never
into TerraSend.
Yeah, exactly.
I think literally within the week, within a couple days, we were over at TerraSend. We met Rob and we were blown away. I remember in the car ride home, we were just wow, that happened so fast. They just seem such good people, just kind of same vibe as us, same ideas, same goal, end goal, and just same values. And I think it just aligned and we moved really quickly on it. And
Fell in love.
Really impressed. Yeah. It was love at first sight. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I find a lot of things our California launch as well is kind of from an old business relationship and friendship that Jeremy has had in California. And I feel it is a lot about kind of who you know. And there's so many people that you don't even realize are in the industry now. Mm-hmm. And every time I see somebody, they're oh, you're in the Canada. Oh, I am too. I'm doing this. What are you doing? And it's just kind of crazy how it's just exploded. And it's this gold rush.
Empires are built on relationships.
Yeah.
And that's why we loved this, because we just got along right away. Mm-hmm. And I knew we could all do really great things. Mm-hmm. There was going to be, every company's going to be making mistakes. Everyone's going to be figuring this out. Health Canada changes everything every other day. It's just you need partners that you can trust, people that you like to work with. Mm-hmm. And this was like a win from the first moment.
Mm-hmm. And I think there was a lot of like synergies as well in what we were going after, right? I think you touched on it a bit, is really the commoditization of this industry. And that's where we again have slightly different strategy. And I think that's seen by not having a ton of large cultivation, is understanding that that's going to commoditize, but where can we own the pieces where IP is able to be protected, right, but as well as those margins, you're not going to see the same compression. Right. So again, you know, kind of we both, I think, touched based on that and realized that. And I think that's a very different strategy in this space. So to see alignment on that front, you know, kind of just validated the overall long-term vision of this partnership.
Yeah. And like for an LP, like kind of on the reverse side of things, to partner with a, not a lifestyle brand, but this is something kind of along those lines. I mean, it kind of humanizes the company.
Yeah.
Gives it a bit more of personality. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, for the corporation side of it,
I think you know, there's definitely value in brand partners and having this collaborative outlook on the space. I think, you know, where a lot of people are going after this kind of independent, we see a ton of value in understanding the relationships they're able to bring to the table. But even beyond that, just the synergies and brain power that we can kind of put behind this, and understanding how much everyone's kind of taking on. I think the biggest, you know, drain right now is resources as a whole, getting people kind of educated enough where they can navigate through the space. You know, there's just a ton of synergies and a ton of value that they were able to bring to the table and allowed us to kind of go after a different base, right? Solace Health Marketplace, where Weedbox is found on, doesn't have competing brands, right? And Solace Health is not the brand itself, right? So Solace Health is more the store, and we want to facilitate other brands coming through that. So they have their own kind of brand page explaining the story, absolutely no advertisement, but more educating on what the different values each brand brings. And I think by doing so, it allows a kind of a collaborative look at the industry and the number of brands that can be brought forward, as opposed to kind of going at it independently with one singular approach.
It's pretty incredible as like a, I mean, we call it a new industry. It's not a new industry, but as a relatively new legal industry, soon to be, cannabis is one of, is sort of singular in that we are open and we like to share and have conversations. You know, so many people compare it to the .com in expected growth, and I think that's appropriate. But unlike the .com era, we're seeing this like wonderful time of people coming together and sharing things, not necessarily for financial gain, but more just for like knowledge expansion, because so many people don't know enough about cannabis that it's like you kind of have to.
And you know, I was in this industry 2014. We were not at the point where we were competing for patients. Just because I got a patient doesn't mean that, you know, the other licensed producer didn't. And we really did have to come together and pull as much knowledge as we could find and kind of sift through some of the fluffier stuff, because there is a ton of fluff in this industry. And that's really why kind of this collaborative approach is necessary for the industry to kind of raise its benchmark as a whole.
Even now, I mean, 2018, and I only recently acquired a prescription for cannabis, and I, you know, was going through the list of LPs that I could
choose
from.
Was it through THN? Plug?
it was actually through Canascribe. Plug. But I remember the LPs that were offered to me, the offerings were incredible. Yeah. I went with one, and then I decided to go with another. And you don't have to just do one thing. There are so many options now with legal acquisition of cannabis that I don't think people really anticipated coming out of the weed closet.
And I think opening product formats and derivatives is going to widen that segment, right? When you're talking about dried product that someone either has to vaporize or smoke, you know, there's a ton of stigma there. You're still getting the smell. You're still going through those actions. And I think when it comes to whether it's capsules or sublinguals or, you know, transdermal patches, whatever the case may be, mucosal delivery formats, that's when you're starting to see users, because it doesn't look like cannabis anymore. Right. I think a huge conversation changer in the entire industry was 2016, when oils was allowed. It no longer looked like weed. And we would drop a little bottle of oil on the doctor's table and be like, this is cannabis. And that's when the conversation changed. Absolutely no inhalation. It was an orally dosed product. And it transitioned from a product that was prescribed in grams to something that was prescribed in milligrams, which is something doctors feel comfortable on. I mean, there was still a lack of knowledge in terms of titration guides and all of that. But it allowed some of that stigma to kind of disappear. And I think as we move forward, not in the medical side is one thing, but also the recreational, I think a lot of that stigma will disappear.
Yeah. And I think there's going to be a lot of people as well coming, like when rec does pass, people who have either never smoked cannabis before or smoked it once in high school and had an awful experience, who are coming back to the industry and maybe are going to be a lot more easily convinced to try it or want to try it if it's something like a tincture or sublingual or a vape pen or something like that. Whereas like smoking a joint might have kind of that stigma attached to it, or just horrible memories from when they just bought, like gone are the days where you buy a random joint from like someone at your high school and like, oh, guess we'll see what happens.
What's like, it's high like, school like,
like, I can't imagine. Weed, yeah. Right? Before when you would go buy weed, you would buy weed.
Weed
yeah.
Weed.
And now it's like, you're going what to
strain
buy
is this?
Yeah. Phytocannabinoid.
Yeah, right. Can you like, imagine asking your dealer what strain?
Yeah, what strain are?
It's weed.
A limonene. I actually or a smell mercy. More.
Yeah. What weed is this? It's weed. Yeah. that's all you know.
So I'm curious for Weedbox, like talking about kind of the reintroducing cannabis to either people who used it in the past and didn't have a good experience or new users, what is Weedbox planning to do to encourage the kind of broadening of that community as legalization happens here in Ontario and as well in the States?
Right. I think education is key. Like, we're really starting a lot of educational content, some of it in partnership with TerrAscend as well. They have a lot of knowledge at their fingertips. And I think just like explaining to people, like there's different methods of consumption. You don't have to smoke a joint. Like there's so many more options. I think that's what's so exciting about the industry right now is the technology and the advancements and the fact that there is so much money behind it now. We can do all these like experimental things and all these new products are coming out. So whether you use it for a certain thing, whether you use it that way, we can kind of talk to our users and see what they're using it for. And maybe they've had a good experience using it like this and it can help somebody else. So I think going down to the science, but also just applying it to customer reviews and stuff like that and the other experiences people have, obviously everybody's different, but I think just education is key and putting out a ton of content and just making people feel comfortable, because I think people also, it's changing now, but people, it's like, if you don't know anything about cannabis, like, where do you go to find out about it? Like, people would be like embarrassed to ask or, you know, like, I think, that's all changing with the stigmas changing. People are a lot more interested to find out and kind of do the research. And I know even my mom, when she found out I was in the cannabis industry, she's like, oh, so I learned about terpenes on the Weedbox blog. And I didn't know that there's like also terpenes in lavender and this and that. And she's just like, it's so cute because it's like, that's a lot of people. And like my mom, when I was home, like I kind of was showing her this vape that we use. And she's like, oh, I like this. Like, because she would hack her brains out if she smoked joint, right? So it's like, that's a good example. Like, my mom smoked weed way back in the day and she's like, yeah, it was just weed, like I don't know what it was. And she's just so interested to kind of find out the science behind it, and it's all exciting to her what we're doing, because it's like totally a thing that she never thought would be happening in her
time. For sure. Jeremy, what would you say to someone who is like, weed's a drug and I don't want anything to do with it?
Oh, like his dad?
Oh. Sure. Yeah, like your dad. How do you approach it? Like, well, that's how do you have different. That conversation?
I mean, I would literally lay down a dock shaming, like, you know, over a couple of gin and tonics. And, like, he would.
Here are all the studies to support why I am right.
But I would be
Do
really
you find
aggressive.
That that's an effective approach, though?
Like, not at all, but you asked me about my dad specifically. Okay, and, like, that's where I would completely destroy him on the dock.
Okay.
Just pound him with knowledge until he just shuts up. That's that. Yeah, I'm a really argumentative person, so maybe actually that's going to be applied to a lot of people. But that's a good question. How would I do that? So most people I surround myself with really don't ever give me feedback like that. It is a boomer generation that kind of have out their Nancy Reagan playbook, like, this is your brain on drugs. And, you know, relating it to something that they can relate to. Like, we've got several people sort of within our family circle that have had problems with actual drugs, whether it's opiates or something, where this is something that is replacing it's
safer solution.
It's safer solution to like dealing with a trigger, right? And when you can relate it to something like, hey, this person, when they felt like this, would completely dive into this horrible hole where they ended up doing lines of oxy. Now they can stop that moment by killing out their anxiety with a self-prescribed cannabis. And that kind of ends the conversation right there. This Nancy Reagan playbook gets shut, and, you know, the conversation can progress. But when you, with something relatable like that, where they really understand it, when you can put it into context where it's not just like, you know, they're imagining someone downtown, you know, who needs a joint and they're going to go rob a liquor store, which is like, what fucking liquor store are you talking about? Or like, I'm going to rob a convenience store. No one does that. This isn't rural Kansas. No. Like, we're not, no one's robbing the corner liquor store so they can go buy weed, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
This isn't some.
Or like, and I think that comes with changing the stigma as well. Like, it's like for a long time, like I am a daily cannabis user and I feel like people, like I would tell people that this was a few years ago when it wasn't as kind of prominent, the industry wasn't as big as it is now. People would be like, what? Like, what? Well, don't you get, like, doesn't this happen? And it's like people, there's just that stigma. And I feel like as more people come out, it's like, yes, I'm like a normal member of society. I'm a daily cannabis user. It's great. Like, would you rather me crush two bottles of wine and be like wicked hungover and doing stupid stuff? Like, it's like, no, like it's.
Old people think that's okay. And that's the thing. That's they think that there's like if someone's a drunk, they're like, ah, you just had a little bit of problem with the booze, right? Like you just, nah, it's, you know,
overdid
you,
it.
You cranked through half a bottle of whiskey. It's like,
got a
that's
DUI,
an actual problem.
Like, and you could die from that.
Exactly.
Got, get it,
but old like, people
and pass it on to your kids.
Boomers, boomers still to this day, most of them think that's okay.
Right.
Like that,
it's
there's
so wild. There's
like that's a problem that oh you can just sort of shrug off or done like or just everyone
brush
ignore
it under the rug.
Yeah,
yeah, just like it's no big deal.
Just
why
a casual
are you
alcohol.
It, why are you even talking about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But someone who uses cannabis to just you know sort of stop you know anxiety induced insomnia. You know, you have a real problem.
Well,
you're
right.
Gonna go rob. Out. You're gonna rob a convenience store, right?
And I think we're all talking medical here right now, but I think recreational as well. It's safer solution, less harmful to the body, and you have seen results from states that have legalized this, where massive it's either results. Right, like massive results, whether it's a reduction in crime,
binge drinking,
reduction in alcoholism.
Yeah.
There's a new study that just
going
came
back
out.
Into the education and healthcare system,
yeah,
in Colorado,
but also for,
right?
For yourself too, like the amount of calories and like you go you have six glasses of wine that night. It's like, you know, maybe don't have a joint. There's zero calories in there.
No hangover. Yeah.
The thing is, alcohol companies see this coming, right?
Oh,
and that's why you've seen the investments from alcohol companies.
Exactly.
Whether it is Constellation Brands or some of the smaller groups, Aphria just announced something, right? So when you're looking at that, I think, and I've discussed this with a number of kind of different alcohol companies, it's like there's two main things that they kind of see coming, right? Whether it is competition for what they like to call the social lubricant market, which is like, I'm going to have a glass of wine and feel more comfortable socializing around in a group.
What a terrible name.
Or there's one other side, and it is the mind escape. Right. So I'm a mom. I want to get in the bath and I want to have my glass of wine and kind of slightly disconnect, right? And I think that's where you see the two main competitive factors for the alcohol industry. And when you are looking at kind of unique products, slightly different, like Providence Brands or whatever the case may be, that are starting to provide lower dose, more sociable products.
Right.
So I can have five or six. Mm-hmm. I can have, you know, and kind of continue in the same mentality as alcohol. I think that's where it starts to get really interesting
and
competitive.
Is the future. Yeah.
Totally.
Huge. Those 2 to 5 milligram edibles are like my bread and butter.
You don't have to worry about like eating just a corner and being like stuck on your couch.
And edibles are scary at the moment, especially in and I'm not highlighting a more regulatory system and kind of pushing on the black market, but when we look at that and we understand that you have no consistency in terms of cannabis content per dose, that's when it starts to get really scary. Mm-hmm. And when it takes an hour and a half to kick in, and understanding that, honestly, that's where this industry starts to frighten me the most.
I agree with you 100%. I'm not, I mean, of all the things on the list, edibles to me are at the bottom.
I do think that there's a way to do it properly.
But our brain, so what I look at, like our brains,
it needs to be standardized.
Our brains aren't it's built into our DNA that I look at. I look at a glass of, if I drink two beers, I'm going to feel this way. Mm-hmm. Right. I have three glasses of whiskey, I'm going to feel this way. Our brains are programmed to understand beverages.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are also programmed to do not touch mom or dad's beverages. Mm-hmm. Right. Edibles are dangerous to have in a family household. Okay.
Well, we do already know they will never look like the edibles we're seeing on the black market today. There will be no gummy bears. There will be no
dried mango.
Confusion.
Yeah.
Pantry items, sugars, salts, oils.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see some companies with like the automated fill lines where it's injecting cannabis per gummy mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be. And I think outside of kind of what you're saying is waiting
the standardization, for the I think is yeah. we're just kind of waiting for that.
My lovely, I don't, like, sexy words.
Like, I'm a daily cannabis user, but I don't actually like edibles because of edibles. That reason.
I do not like edibles.
I'm like, I'm going to be hungover. I'm going to literally eat and black out, not remember it. And I have no idea how I'm going to feel. Okay. And I feel a lot of people are very Instagram.
There's so much danger.
I've never had my cookies. Okay, so this is a much broader.
But like a dog can get into an edible and then now you got to, yeah. you know, you're seeing emergency in the middle of the night with mm-hmm. your pet. I mean, your kids could get into mm-hmm. it. I find edibles for me is just like, that's low on the list.
It's a high. It's
I think
high
beverages risk. are going to be the big, big winner.
Huge.
Also, when's the last time the LCBO sold a cookie?
Oh God.
Right.
The thought of that just makes me shrivel. Just before I let you guys go, any upcoming Weed Box events, activations happening that we should look forward to?
Oh,
dish.
Oh, no, we're going to keep all this stuff under
the
we have so many There's things we're going to be announcing.
Stay tuned.
We do this properly because, you know, I'll just blurt shit out.
Right.
And we have a PR firm that's joining us soon. And
where can we find you? Instagram, online, plug.
All give the it to time. Me. Yeah. Weedbox.io.
Instagram.com/weedbox.io. Okay. Facebook is weedbox.io. No dot.
Any plans in Ontario? You're just launching in California.
We're going to have our first store is going to be opening up in Palm Springs, California. We will have a flagship in Toronto that is going to be, you know, just the entire brand story will be there.
And
you know,
and through TerraSend, they can do medical all across Canada.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Holy moly, I cannot wait.
Yeah.
Guys.
Well, there's a lot of really big things coming.
Huge. So, yeah. Can't wait to sample all of your products. You know where I live, so just send it straight to my address. I want to thank Jeremy, Laurelyn, and Robin for talking with us today. Thank you guys so much today. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
That was my conversation with Jeremy, Laurelyn, and Robin of TerraSend and Weedbox. I don't come from a business background, so this is a kind of a new world for me. We're constantly hearing about new mergers and acquisitions in the cannabis industry. Companies that were small even a few months ago are now massive parts of licensed producers. It's a really interesting time where integration is not just about, you know, highest yield. It's about creativity and forward thinking investment. So if you can look towards, you know, what's going to happen in 5 years, if you can have that kind of breadth, then your business could potentially benefit from that. So yes, it is a risk, but hey, it's cannabis. You got to kind of roll the dice a little bit. I'm really excited for next week's episode. I'm going to sit down with a friend of mine who was a dispensary worker who went through the process of a police raid. He's going to take us through kind of what that experience was like. Really excited for you to hear that. If you haven't already, like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or thedopest.com. You can catch us everywhere. But above all, remember your cannabis etiquette, everyone, and puff, puff, pass this podcast on to a friend. The Dopest is a production of Weedbox, produced and edited by Noah Snyderman of Voice Magic. Original music by John Mavro. The show is researched and edited by myself, Zoe Brownstone, and Noah Snyderman. You can find us on Instagram at TheDopist. That's at THEDOPIST. Until then, we'll be back next week.